As announced, we're starting in the book of Esther this week. This book, I tried to be scholarly because we have some teachers that are very scholarly that know history of these books and all that. And so I did a lot of studying of that. I'm going to recommend to you, if you're ever going to study for a book to teach, don't study what the internet says, because you're going to find lots of differing opinions. And even when you study different stuff that's actually factual of history and stuff, you will find that they don't always agree, some of the different histories and stuff. And their view is not of God's view. The history isn't and everything. The book of Esther has been one of the most debated books ever written, or that was added to the Bible. It was debated whether to be put into the Septuagint, however you say it, the Greek Septuagint. It was debated on being in the canons, for the Hebrew canons, because it was debated whether it was secular or sacred. In the book of Esther, we do not see God mentioned at all. So it's been very debated. There's debates on who King Ahasuerus was. Was he Artaxerxes? Was he Xerxes? I mean, so when you do studies like that, I'm going to tell you, it's going to mess with you. Just stick to the Bible, because you're going to see where things come together. Though we're studying the book of Esther, I don't want to start in the book of Esther, because we need to understand what was kind of going on at the time, where this fits in. So the book of Esther, there's a storyline that falls in between Ezra chapter 6 and Ezra chapter 7 time frame. King Xerxes was the king of Persia from 486 to, I believe it was 465 B.C. This book, with the time frames given, that would put it about 483 B.C. is the start of this book and everything, because it says in the third year of his reign. So that's what you're going to see in this. But let's flip back over to Ezra chapter 1, because I want you to kind of understand what's going on here. It's easy, as we study some of the Old Testament characters and stuff, that we start to try to make them someone to idolize after, or to follow, to put them kind of on a pedestal and stuff. And that's one of the things we have to be careful of, because that's really not what we're called to do, is put people in these positions. We should be always seeking to please God and live a life, because if we put ourselves up against Christ, none of us compare. But let's go ahead and start in Ezra chapter 1, starting in verse 1. So you're starting to see the Persian rule. And now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia. Cyrus was one of the first kings of Persia. And again, Persia would be like the Iranian. So he was one of the first kings. And so now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he sent a proclamation throughout all of his kingdom, and also put it into writing, saying, "Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all of heaven. The God of heaven has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has appointed me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever there is among you of all his people, may his God be with him. Let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and rebuild the house of the Lord, the God of Israel. He is the God who is in Jerusalem. And every survivor at whatever place he may live, let the men of that place support him with silver and gold, with goods and cattle, together with a free will offering for the house of God, which is in Jerusalem." So now Persia has overtaken the Babylonian Empire. This would have been approximately 70 years before Xerxes became king of Persia. And Cyrus recognizes who stirred him up first. Who does it say stirred him up in his heart? The Lord God stirred up in King Cyrus's heart to come out with a proclamation. This proclamation was to let the Jews that were down in Babylon go back to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple in Judah. And so he makes this proclamation and lets the people go. Well, in Esther, what we're going to find is this is in Persia. So this is 70 years later. So there's still some of the Jews did not go back to Jerusalem. They stayed where they're at. They stayed in the lands they're at. Kind of explains maybe why we don't see God in the story, right? Because these people weren't even willing to go back to the homeland when the king 70 years earlier said, go back. So it makes you start to wonder, we sit there and we put Esther on a pedestal. We put Mordecai on a pedestal sometimes. Is that really where they need to be? The situation wasn't good for the Jews at this time. Why were the Jews in captivity? They didn't obey God. So they had the Assyrians, the Babylonians, now the Persians. It's not good. They were disobeying God. So God's left them in captivity. Now he stirs up the heart of Cyrus. You guys can go back home, go back to Judah, rebuild the temple. Not all the people go. So the scene is not great for the people, the Jews. And we're going to, as we go further into Esther, you'll start to see it really wasn't great for Esther from the very beginning. In Ezra chapter 4, flip over to Ezra chapter 4, because you will see King Ahasuerus, name mentioned in Ezra chapter 4, starting in verse 4. So this is, people have gone back to Judah, to Jerusalem, to build the temple. There was people that wanted to help the Jews build the temple. The Jews said, no, you don't worship our God, and they weren't going to allow it. In verse 4, then the people of the land discouraged the people of Judah and frightened them from building and hired counselors against them to frustrate their counsel all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, king of Persia. And Darius was the one before Xerxes. Now in the reign of Ahasuerus, in the beginning of his reign, they wrote an accusation against the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. In the days of Artaxerxes, which would be Xerxes' son, Bishlam, Meheredeth, Tabeel, and the rest of his colleagues wrote to Artaxerxes, king of Persia, and the text of the letter was written in Aramaic and translated from Aramaic. And then starting in verse 11, this is a copy of the letter which they sent to him. To King Artaxerxes, your servants, the men in the region beyond the river, now let it be known to the king that the Jews who came up from you have come to us at Jerusalem. They are rebuilding the rebellious and evil city and are finishing the walls and repairing the foundations. Now let it be known to the king that if the city is rebuilt and the walls are finished, they will not pay tribute, custom, or toll, and it will damage the revenue of the kings. Now because we are in the service of the palace and it is not fitting for us to see the king's dishonor, therefore we have sent and informed the king so that a search may be made in the record books of your fathers, and you will discover in the record books and learn that the city is a rebellious city and damaging to the kings and provinces, and that they have incited a revolt within the past days. Therefore, that city was laid waste. We inform the king that if this city is rebuilt and the walls finished, as a result, you will have no possession in the province beyond the river. So there was stirring up going on all the way from the time Cyrus let the Jews go back all the way to Xerxes' son, Artaxerxes. And so there's people that did not like the Jews. That's kind of important to think about as we get further into the story. We know Haman and stuff, some of these characters will be introduced. You'll see that there was, all the way back then, there was still hatred and dislike for the Jews, and they did not want them to succeed. And that's why I thought it was important that we kind of see where all this story falls in place with the history of. This is towards the end of the Old Testament. It is in the book of histories in our Old Testament, but in chronological order, it should be towards the end. You should have Ezra and Esther kind of together, and then Nehemiah, and then you got some of the minor prophets at that time too. And that's all more towards the end chronologically. You got Malachi would be the last of them. So it's really Ezra, Esther, Nehemiah, Malachi would have been the ones at this time frame. Nehemiah and Malachi would have came after. So that's some of the history into what's going on before we get into the story itself. We're going to see a lot of things of power, glory, where people's glory comes, what happens to it. And so I'm just going to start in verse 1. Esther chapter 1, verse 1. Now it took place in the day of Ahasuerus, the Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces. In those days, as King Ahasuerus sat on his royal throne, which was in Susa, the capital, in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his princes and attendants, the army officers of Persia and Media, the nobles and the princes of his provinces, being in his presence. And he displayed the riches of his glory and the splendor of his great majesty for many days, 180 days. So right away, we find out that he is a great ruler, 127 provinces. So the Persian Empire, his father, Darius, was the one that expanded it kind of to its limits, where they stopped. King Darius, or Darius the Great, went ahead and expanded a little further to the north and what east. He tried to go up into Greece, failed at Greece. Xerxes actually tried to finish what Darius did not complete in Greece, and he completely failed too. And this was 480 BC to 479 BC, so it would have been in about a sixth, seventh year of reign, as he completely failed as he tried to attack Greece. He was able to burn Athens because the people retreated. He burnt Athens. But he was a powerful man. So what we're seeing right away, though, is he likes to share his splendor with people. He likes people to see all that he has, how great he is. And history says that King Xerxes, Darius had a beautiful palace. But Xerxes had to double it. He had to build one twice the size of what Darius had. And so he's sharing his splendor. He's trying to, and he's inviting who? In this first few sections, first four verses, who does he invite to this party? Princes, noblemen, officials, the army, the military leaders. So he's inviting people that had influence and power. And this first one, and how long did the party last? 180 days, 6 months, he's throwing a party to show off his splendor, his glory, the things he has plundered. So what are we starting to notice already about Ahasuerus and his attitude towards things? He wants us to know how important he is. He wants people to give him glory for things. Look at what I have. Look what I have accomplished. He's trying to impress. What did we learn in some of the minor prophets? What usually happens to those that try to, when they start to become powerful and conceited? What always happens? They fail. They fall. God humbles them, doesn't he? So what we're seeing here is we see a man that's really caught up in his riches, in his glory, trying to show his influence and power of what he has. Starting in verse 5, when these days were completed, the king gave a banquet lasting 7 days for all the people who were present in Susa, the capital, from the greatest to the least, in the court of the garden of the king's palace. So now he throws another party. Right after the 180-day one ends, he throws another party. And this time it's in the garden palace, in the court of the garden palace, and he invites everyone in Susa, in the capital. Says, you're all welcome, from the greatest to the least. Everyone's welcome. So he's throwing another party. So this is the second banquet we already see in just the first five verses. Verse 6 is going to explain the garden. There were the court in the garden. There were hangings of fine white and violet linen, held by cords of fine purple linen on silver rings and marble columns, and couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of I don't even know how to pronounce that. Porphyry? Okay, porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and precious stones. So now we're starting to see all the things he has. It's elegant. It's the best of the best. He displays that. He wants everyone to see it now. Now he doesn't want just the officials and the princes and the noble and the military see it. Now he's opening it so everyone can see his glory, all that he has. Verse 7, drinks were served in golden vessels of various kinds, and the royal wine was plentiful according to the king's bounty. So now we're starting to see there's golden vessels to drink out of. There's plenty of wine at this party. Verse 8, and the drinking was done according to the law. There was no compulsion. For so the king had given orders to each official of his household that he should do according to the desire of each person. So now they're not forcing people to drink, which is kind of weird as a law, right? We're not going to force you to drink. But you want to drink? Drink to your own liking. He's opening it up. He's allowing people, and that's kind of weird that they had to actually create a law to say, we're not going to force you to drink, but as you drink, drink like you want, as each person desires. In verse 9, Queen Vashti also was giving a banquet for the women in the palace, which belonged to King Ahasuerus. So Vashti, the queen, we're introduced to her. She too is given a banquet, and this is for the women. And this is actually in the palace. So now we have Ahasuerus. I'm trying to pronounce it right because Carrie shared with me the pronunciation, Bible pronunciation. And so I actually tried to, and it's Ahasuerus is how it's actually pronounced. But I've always heard it Ahasuerus, so I really have a hard time to go back to Ahasuerus. But, and then Queen Vashti. So on the seventh day, so this is the last day of the party for everyone, the king was merry with wine. He commanded Mehuman, Bissa, Harbona, Bigatha, Abigatha, Zethar, and Carcass, the seven eunuchs who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus, to bring Queen Vashti before the king with her royal crown in order to display her beauty to the people and the princes, for she was beautiful. So now we see in his drunkenness, as he is merry, what's he command? Bring out Queen Vashti. Now, I don't think this is probably a come out and greet everyone type of request that the king's making here, because we're going to see in the next verse, she's going to refuse to come out. I think if it was just to come out, greet everyone, it says that he was trying to display her beauty because she was a beautiful woman. So obviously there was something more to it. And this doesn't mean that she was godly, though. A lot of times we like to say, oh, look, she's a godly woman. This doesn't mean she's godly. If your husband told you to come out in a way to display you before people in a way that's you don't feel comfortable with, what are you going to tell them? Probably going to tell them, no, I'm not coming out. I'm not going to do it. This does not make her a godly person. And I've heard it taught before that she's godly. Well, no, this does not mean she's godly. She too was having a party for the women. She refused the king here. So verse 12, but Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command delivered by the eunuchs. Then the king became very angry and his wrath burned within him. Then the king said to the wise men who understood the times, for it was custom of the king so to speak before all who knew law and justice. So I just, this whole story, I mean, as you go further into it, you start to realize, who does the king surround himself with? Are these wise men? Or is it just men that know the customs and things of the age? You're not going to see wisdom here in a minute as they tell him what to do. There is no wisdom. He does not surround himself with wisdom. And what do we notice, though, that the king's attitude is when his wife refuses him? A mad drunk. He burns with anger inside. And what's he do? He calls others to side with him. Hey, my wife's not listening to me. What should I do? Poor decision making on his part. But let's read on. And it's funny because it says, then the king said to the wise men, which we see they're not wise, but verse 14, and we're close to him, Kashina, Shethar, Admethea, Tarshish, Merez, Marcena, and Memucan, the seven princes of Persia and Media who had access to the king's presence and sat in the first place in the kingdom. According to law, what is to be done with Queen Vashti? Because she did not obey the command of King Ahasuerus, delivered by the eunuchs. And in the presence of the king and the princes, Memucan said, Queen Vashti has wronged not only the king, but also the princes and all the peoples who are in the provinces of King Ahasuerus. So now Memucan steps up. King's like, what do I do? He's like, gonna step up, throw himself out there. And what's he say? And what did he want to happen? Or what did he feel was going to happen, though, because of this? Not only did she wrong the king, but all the people. This woman's affecting all of us. Okay, now you're talking to King Ahasuerus, who feels very mighty and powerful, and let me show you my glory, and now he's got a queen that says, I'm not coming out. You commanded me to do something, and I'm not going to do it. And so now Memucan ends up speaking up and says, she's not only disgracing you, she's disgracing all the people. This is going to affect all the people in the provinces of the king. This was one person that now can take down this whole kingdom, according to Memucan. This one woman is going to take down the whole kingdom. He's worried about this. So verse 17, for the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, causing them to look with contempt on their husbands by saying, King Ahasuerus commanded Queen Vashti to be brought into his presence, but she did not come. I don't know how it's going to spread through this 2.1 million mile kingdom that they had, but Memucan is pretty concerned about it, that this is going to spread. Well, you'll see their actions here in a minute. It's going to spread, and not the way they thought they were going to. And what was this going to cause all women to do? All women are going to revolt. All of you women are going to disobey the commands of your husband because the queen did it. That's what Memucan's responding. Now, since we're not wise people, do you all think that would happen? When you see one person do something, do you all do it just because that one person did it? Ooh. Yes, Ken. No, and I'm not saying that what she did was wrong. I'm just saying that it doesn't make her godly because she said, I'm not going to come and display myself to all these people. Yes, there are moral people in this world that are not believers of God. There are people with morality, good people. Does not make them godly, though. They're good people. Yeah. Yes, she did. I mean, because most people would be afraid to refuse a king. So she did have some character, and there are some good qualities. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying she is not God. That does not mean she's godly, and we don't need to assume things. That's what I said, even studying even the history and stuff, I had to take out stuff, because there's a lot of speculations, and there's a lot of assumptions, and I could teach that, and that would hurt you guys, as it was hurting me as I was studying, because I had to then go to other places to prove that was wrong, or that was right, and it was just... That's ridiculous. The Bible gives us what we need. God provides us what we need. So when you study, study here. Because the rest of the stuff can become noise and cause confusion and stuff. And so I tried to stay away from that. I thought some of the factual history things are good to know, just kind of what the time was like and who the different kings were and where this all starts. A story falls into place. But all the rest of the stuff I was reading, I'm telling you guys, it is a lot of noise that takes away what God's trying to get across through this story. All right, so we all agree that just because of one woman's action doesn't mean all women are going to follow. One man's action, we're all not going to follow. Unless it's Jesus Christ's action, then hopefully we're all following. But other than that, yes. But Mimi Kin is very concerned about this. I believe I was at 18. And this day, the ladies of Persia Media who have heard of the queen's conduct will speak in the same way to all the king's princes, and there will be plenty of contempt and anger. If it pleases the king, let a royal edict be issued by him, and let it be written in the laws of Persia Media so that it cannot be repealed, that Vashti should come no more into the presence of King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal position to another who is more worthy than she. Now he wants an edict, a law created by the king. Now it's a law. It's an edict. Where's it going? Throughout all the empire, right? Now the women do know of Queen Vashti's disobedience to the king because they're pronouncing it everywhere now. Now he's got to make a law about what should happen to this. And so, I mean, when you think of all this, man can get caught up in its glory, and God uses little things like this to just kind of laugh at and say, look at you people. You guys thought you had all this power. You thought you were a powerful kingdom. You were the greatest kingdom at that time. You covered more land than any king. Cyrus, we've seen in Ezra chapter 1, God stirred up his heart. He recognized that all this came from God and allowed the people to go back to Jerusalem and Judah to rebuild the temple. And now we're about six kings down and we're starting to see where the focus goes back to, look what I've done. Look what I've built. Look what I've accomplished. And now, it's this one woman's action that's going to destroy everything that he just did. That's what they're worried about. So he makes a law about it, sends it throughout an edict. And when the king's edict, which he shall make, is heard throughout all his kingdom, great as it is, then all women will give honor to their husbands, great and small. So you women, the only reason you would give honor to your husband is because the king said you're going to give honor to your husband. The king couldn't even get his wife to give him honor, but yet he's going to send out a law telling all women you are to honor your husband, that you're going to give honor to them, and he couldn't even do it himself. That's where you start to see some of the humor in this story. The wise men of the time are concerned about this one woman and it getting spread throughout the kingdom. They're the ones that encourage the king to write a edict or a law that gets shared throughout all the kingdom, even as great as it is, that all women will honor their husbands. So, yep, they help spread it out there and they really think this is going to change how a woman will honor her husband because the king said so. Yes.
he was more concerned about his own life and his there.
Oh, yes.
More than everybody.
Exactly. No, and that's a good point, too, because, yes, well, sometimes they get caught up in their own little world and make rules. Go ahead, Richard.
To give him advice, and he does all this in anger.
Yeah.
Because two plus one, you do that thing, and then he's going to realize now what you're going to tell him. So he can be manipulated, he's been, getting drunk, and, and which may have been the reason she rejected him in the first place.
Could have been.
Because she thought she could. I'll manipulate myself out of this one like a problem. Remember, she's a queen.
And it could very well be. I mean, we just don't know all of it, but we do know that this is what's happening. It's getting spread, and it's going crazy. And so we start to see that glory does not come from what we have, right? Honor does not come from what we have. This was a man that was focused on that which he had. He had power. He had money. I'm going to show the world what I have. And he gets caught up in being scared that one woman was going to tear down his whole empire. Everything that he has built, that his fathers and grandfathers have built, is all going to be destroyed because one woman did not honor him, did not obey him. And now he's going to make every woman do this. Verse 21, and this word pleased the king and the princes, and the king did as Memucan proposed. So he sent letters to all the king's provinces, to each province according to its script, and to every people according to their language, that every man should be the master in his own house, and the one who speaks in the language of his own people. So the king could not control his house. Sends out a law that says all men are to control. They're to be the rulers of their house. The wives are to honor their husbands. And he couldn't even do that himself. So it just shows how laughable it is. And I think chapter one of the lessons we need to really pay attention to is, though we can get caught up in the things of this world and start to focus on what we have and what we've accomplished in life, is not where the glory comes from. You can impress people with what you have, what you've accomplished, but does it impress God? Because God overall has control of it. Think of a Babylonian king. They got pretty arrogant, haughty, that they were taken down. Anyone think of that king? Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 4. What do we see happens to Nebuchadnezzar? Graze of the grass, taking his kingdoms taken away from him, and he's to go to the wild to live with the beast of the field. Yeah. What is that? Daniel 4. I want to say it's closer to the end of Daniel 4. We can read it. We got time. I should have wrote this down. Yeah, I was wanting to see where it, That's what I was thinking. It was towards... Okay, let's start in verse 28. All this happened in Nebuchadnezzar the king. 12 months later, he was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon. The king reflected and said, "Is this not Babylon the Great, which I myself have built as a royal residence by the might of my power and for the glory of my majesty?" While the word was in the king's mouth, a voice came from heaven saying, "King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is declared, sovereignty has been removed from you. You will be driven away from mankind, and your dwelling place will be with the beasts of the field. You'll be given grass to eat like cattle, and 7 periods of time will pass over you until you recognize that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows it on whom he wishes." Immediately the word concerning Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled, and he was driven away from mankind and began eating grass like cattle, and his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. So he was humbled pretty quick, wasn't he? God took it all away from him. God's in control of everything that happens. We can get caught up in, we're such a great nation. Oh, we're part of the United States. Look at the power we have. Look at the wealth and the riches that this nation has. And we can start to put our focus on, man, I'm glad I'm part of the United States. Where should our hope be in? Kurt?
And when that doesn't happen his way, he gets angry, and then he acts in haste, and he acts without wisdom and without thinking and his own thought, and making unwise decisions. And we can take that to our lives. You know, it's like everything that we should not be doing, and you know, against God, is really a good example of everything that we should not be doing, and the total opposite of how we should be acting with God.
Yeah, very good point, Kurt. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, that is part of what it's trying to get across here too. And I'm glad you pointed it out, because I should have pointed that out too. I think Richard brought me into it a little bit too. With, hey, this is what's happening around here. Queen Vashti did refuse, and can even. I like your points that you guys are pointing out, that we can get caught up in the things of this world. We can get caught up in all these things, and he's telling them not to. Here's what's actually happened. And this was a king again. We get to see his personality. We get to see what he's about in chapter 1. We get to see who he goes to for advice. The world. What if we go to the world for advice? What happens? Do we get good advice? We get terrible advice. We start to get advice that opposes what God wants when we seek advice from people that are not godly. We see when he goes to people that are not truly wise, that he gets foolish answers. If you take pride in life, you can get caught up in the foolish things of this world. You can make foolish decisions. You can do all these foolish things, as Kurt was just pointing out, the things that oppose God. But we also can get caught up in, as I said though, even as a nation, we can get caught up in the glories of the things of how powerful we are. But what we always have to remember is God has control of it all. We learned that in the earlier studies with the minor prophets, of how God opposed the proud. He would go ahead and humble the proud. And here, he almost does it in a laughable manner with Vashti of King Ahasuerus. And it takes away all the things that he put his hope and glory into, and just made him kind of a fool to the whole nation, to the whole empire. And again, remember, this was the biggest empire ever at that time. It was bigger than the Babylonian Empire. They were huge. Like I said, it was 2.1 million square miles at the height of the Persian Empire. So it's huge. It went all the way from the Aegean Sea all the way to the west side, southwest side of the Mediterranean Sea. So expanded all the way from Africa, all the way to the north part of India, up into what we now would consider like Romania in that area, around the Black Sea. So it was huge. And now it's all, we're starting to already see at the beginning of chapter 1, it's starting to get messed up. It's getting messed up pretty quickly. You know, it was because of one woman's refusal. And it just shows that how God could take even the simple things and destroy a king's power. Any other comments? I appreciate all the comments so far. Any other thoughts on it? Because there's a lot that you can pull out of it. Just because I share what I see in this story does not mean that's the only other thing. So share your thoughts. I appreciate the comments. Chris. Get me out of here. Well, the good thing is, Larry, even though you shared this with me, I didn't try singing any of these songs. Because if I did, you wouldn't have gave them to me. Leroy. Ahasuerus. Yes, King Xerxes. Yes, Ahasuerus was the Jewish name for King Xerxes. Xerxes is actually the Greek name, and his Iranian name or Persian name was something like, it started with a K, Karizura or something like that. So that I did not even look up to see how that was pronounced, but yes, it's like K-H-R-Z-Y-R-A something. So yes, that's the Hebrew name for King Xerxes. And Xerxes was a Greek name. All right. Next week, I will not be here. Brent is going to pick up chapter 2 for me, I guess. And so appreciate your guys' time and attention. Lord willing, we'll see you Sunday.